RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Kate Mason has an extensive background in welfare and community development. She spent the last 3 years researching global narratives that are leading us toward a dystopian world of surveillance, writing at Substack. Kate is a member of Community Voice Australia, which advocates for government and public-private partnership transparency. And Guy Hatchard mentioned her in his recent piece. I quote, "A comprehensive presentation by Kate Mason at the recent 100-year biodynamic conference in Australia cast light on the true extent of biotechnology experimentation currently underway and also on the techniques being used to deceive the public about its intent and scope. For 1 hour, at a staccato pace, Mason flashed document after document on the screen detailing the involvement of national and international government and corporate interests determined to alter the nature and content of our food supply." And if you are interested in seeing her presentation, go to YouTube, search out "The Synthetic Transformation of Our Food Systems, Focus on Australia," and you will get there. And Kate Mason joins us. Thanks for coming on to RCR, Kate.
You're very welcome, Paul.
What is your background?
I had many years working in welfare and community development, so for government and non-government organisations. And then when the mandates happened a few years ago, I was fired.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Because I 100% believe it's complete overreach for the government or corporate entities to be telling you what you have to put inside your body.
Yeah, you won't get anyone disagreeing with that here. Has that turned out okay, though? That's a question I always ask someone who's been in your position.
Yes, it has, because I'm in a lucky position where I've been able to sort of do my own research. So it's worked out really well, and I wouldn't work in the welfare industry anymore based on what I've really learned and the impact markets. So they're making markets off children and families to make profit returns for investors. So since I've really seen the scope of where the welfare industry is heading, I want no part of it.
Okay, we're here to talk about food supply, but how is that working? How is that manifesting?
So in Australia, it's all around the world. It's a global agenda. It's called social impact bonds or pay for success. So instead of the welfare, the government paying non-government organisations like your community centres to run programs, wealthy investors are going to start putting the capital in, and the government gives them a return on investing in welfare programs.
Okay, so it's monetizing.
It's monetizing. It's monetizing vulnerable, but they're also getting into the well-being space because Treasurer Chalmers has created a well-being budget, which means that now it's about children's well-being. And so he refers to the OECD and their well-being index, and the OECD talks about needing to know the relationship between parents because it affects children, needing to know parents' physical and mental health diagnoses and who the family spends time with. So we're looking at a very intrusive data collection on children and families, and we've got people like billionaire philanthropists, in air quotes, like Andrew Forrest, creating markets around children and the vulnerability. But there's many, many players within the field. It's massive, and it's not being spoken enough about.
Yeah, well-being budget. A couple of budgets back from our Labor government, they called one of their budgets the well-being budget. Is that a coincidence that they're using those labels or similar labels?
No, and so what you're looking at is, in welfare, it would always be intervention from children at risk of serious harm, which is like serious abuse. Now it's going into what's a child's well-being. Now, I don't really want the government telling me as a parent what affects my own child's well-being and starting to take that up as their mantle. I think it's incredibly dangerous.
Is it, we'll get on to food in just a moment, is the well-being for money, to make money, or is there a genuine concern or need to be prying ever more closer into these personal affairs?
The rationale is that you have to do early intervention, so it's preventative care. So it's like, you know, before problems manifest, we have to be in there, nosing around in families' business. I've just found out that Scotland had a program that wasn't legislated. They tried to get it legislated in about 2018, I think, which was called, I actually can't remember the name of it, but basically a child is assigned a person from birth up to 18 years of age. This was the idea that then has relationships and professional relationships with that child and family and comes into the family and starts to mosey around in how that family works, you know, and as somebody who worked in the welfare industry for a very long time, I can assure you I wouldn't want quite a chunk of welfare workers that I'm aware of and how they think about children and families and how they pathologise ordinary children and families. I wouldn't want them in there taking notes and you know, going away and discussing it in this climate.
Wow. Okay. I want to read this line back. The involvement of national and international government and corporate interests determined to alter the nature and content of our food supply.
Yes.
Maybe you've just kind of put us in the direction we need to go with your earlier comments. But why? Why do they want to do this?
Well, it's all coming under the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. More specifically, Sustainable Development Goal number 2, which is Feed the World, and number 13, which is Climate Action Now. So in terms of the rationale, it's that we need to synthetically alter our whole food systems and track and trace everything to be able to produce more food for this, you know, growing population, as well as to have climate safe agriculture to save the climate. So this is coming, you know, on one level, it's coming from the, I guess if I just look at the highest level, of course, they're not the only players in this. And then but if you look at just the United Nations and a couple of their reports, they have food and climate change report, healthy diets for a healthier planet, and they're talking about alternative proteins such as plant-based meat and dairy substitutes, insect-based proteins and cell-based meat, which is lab meat. They have transforming food systems, the role of the novel protein alternatives. We've got the Food and Agricultural Organization strategic framework. It's all about tech, digitalization, data and synthetic biology. And in 2020, the Food and Agricultural Organizations of the United Nations and CropLife created a partnership to transform our food systems. And CropLife is Bayer, Monsanto, Syngenta, Corteva, et cetera.
Is this just another follow the money, or is there, because it's so anti or the reverse of nature, isn't it?
It's completely that every nature has to be terraformed. Nature has to be changed synthetically. We have to be changed synthetically as human beings. Everything needs to be transformed synthetically to be good for the climate and for us to be able to live on the planet, if you listen to some of the actors in the field talking. So it's completely synthetic. Everything needs to be transformed into a synthetic landscape.
So it's the climate, the main kind of prop to this?
The climate's massive in it, but it's also, so they had the Green Revolution, which was also about meaning to feed the world in Africa and India and in Mexico. And you had the players like Bill and Melinda Gates and Foundation and Rockefeller, and then Bayer Monsanto and the chemical corporations and the United Nations going in and transforming food systems. Well, that didn't work too well, and it's actually led to decreased nutrition and very problematic things for small farmers because you've got everything patented. So seeds are taken away from small farmers and then made reliant on very expensive chemicals and patented seeds. So that all flopped, even though, you know, you see reports saying it flopped, then you'll see reports saying how wonderful it was. But I go to the side of it flopped. So now this is another, you know, another variation of this with the same actors and now going to do an even better job of feeding the world.
So do they just keep sort of dynamically changing the terms and the kind of the sound of the argument to still press ahead with the same mission all the time?
Yes, but I think it's getting to where it could actually capture 100% of our food supply now.
100%?
Well, that's what I'm thinking as I'm seeing it and reading the documents and the government documents that say we have to do this. So it's in our Australian documents and it's in the CSIRO documents. We have to do this. So, yeah, there's a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of minimizing. There's one plan over here, there's one plan over there, whatever else. But when you start to look at enough plans and you start to see the bigger picture and you listen to the biotech people, they will talk about the vow food. So at the moment, lab meat's about to be released into the market in Australia. It's just going through the food standards body, the FSANZ. And vow food, one of the owners of that company, in interviews, I've listened to him, and he's talking about in the future there might be a few ethical farms still around for the very wealthy who want to hark back to the old times, but, you know, pretty much everyone's going to be eating synthetic food.
Boy, I can feel the who do they think they are question.
Well, they're saving the planet, basically, in their
own. But they're not really, are they?
No, not at all, not at all. It's incredibly disturbing. So, yes, and there's very little oversight. So if we even just look at the Vow Food and their FSANZ submission to allow lab quail into the market in Australia, we're not allowed to see as potential consumers about 30 documents that outline the safety reports, where the cell line comes from, you know, how the cell is grown. So they have to make the cell, you get a cell of a cell from an embryo of quail, and then you have to make that cell just keep multiplying to create some sort of synthetic goo. And we're not allowed to, so the medium Vow is using is a barley that has a pig gene within it that keeps this cell growing.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to see any details because it's all confidential commercial information. So, yes, it's a bizarre state when we're asked as the public to put in submissions, but we can't see the reports because they're confidential commercial. So we have an issue with that. But yeah, it's massive. So also in Australia, we're moving ahead very much with precision fermentation.
Yep.
So code a gene into yeast, and that yeast pumps out proteins. So this is something that resembles milk, something that resembles eggs, something that, you know, so and oils and things like that. So Cauldron is the corporation in Australia, that's one of them, that's getting big contracts with the government to be able to do that. And then you've also got the CRISPRing. So they're basically genetically altering things by cutting through genes and that was deregulated in 2019. So in Australia, within the food market, it'd be in New Zealand as well, because the FSANZ is also about New Zealand.
How's it being received by the public, or is there an ignorance that this is going on? And I know you're trying to get the message out, but none of this is, apart from a glowing story about, you know, a 3D printed piece of meat or something like that, I really don't see anything here. What's the awareness at this stage?
Well, I see that vegans talking about, and the Animal Justice Party being very excited about lab meat, and also about the plant-based proteins, but plant-based proteins don't mean like soybeans and making, you know, or chickpeas and making a chickpea burger. It's incredibly synthetic how it's created. So they're happy about this because they don't want any animals put within the mix of our food. So I think they are quite happy about it, but I actually don't think the vast majority of people are aware that it is moving as fast as it is within Australia.
The tie-up with national and international government that I mentioned before, is that through climate obligations ultimately?
Yes, it's through climate obligations, absolutely, because they say that this lab meat and this these alternative proteins are, you know, they don't release as much carbon, which I don't think is true, but this is what they say. And they also say because it's all made in vats and in laboratories, it's not using any of the land. So even though you need a lot of sugar and you need a lot of other stuff, that you need a lot of energy to be able to do it, they make this sort of, okay, well, agriculture uses too much land, we're not using the land anymore.
It's kind of viewing the human body as some sort of simplistic machine, isn't it?
It's everything's like they talk about programming. It's all just a computer model.
Yeah, gosh.
Yeah, it's really, really intense. And in Australia, we've recently had a Queensland biohub McKay Future Foods Biohub, which is a government initiative and just starting up. And they say global food security relies on the development and delivery of new biotechnologies to increase food production, and that it will use advanced biomanufacturing to create plant-based alternatives. And this relies on recombinant DNA, which is where DNA is brought together from different species. So you're not just working and cutting something out of a gene, you're actually mushing species together, which is, you know, really concerning.
Yeah.
They also, the other aspect to this that I think is really important is that they want to use biomass to, you know, for the energy to be able to be really green and net zero. So that means they have to plant a huge amount of crops for this biomass energy. And in their documents, they say intelligently designed bioenergy feedstock.
Intelligently designed.
Okay. It will offset greenhouse gas emissions. When you read other documents, it's so if you look at Gates, and when I see this intelligently designed, so Gates is the biggest, Bill Gates is the biggest landowner in the USA, and he's going to use that land for genetically altered biomass crops. And this is better for the environment, supposedly, purportedly. So this is where we're heading, that anything that's genetically altered is going to be pushed through as better for the climate and less carbon intensive. But and this is a slightly different, but I think this is where we're going to head, is that documents state that growing crops for biomass will compete with other uses of land, including agriculture, and that competition for land will increase. So I see that as more and more of this net zero biomass crops, genetically altered or in the soil, it's going to push out more and more ability. There's many ways that farming is being pressured, but this is another way that you know, this is not good for the environment, conventional farming. So we need to make farming like this in vats and laboratories. And we'll use that land to genetically alter the crops and use it for our energy. So one of many ways.
Is there any evidence to show that the way agriculture has been operated for thousands of years is actually damaging? And I mean, around the edges, I guess, in waterways, you could make a few arguments, but it's worked pretty well up till now, hasn't it?
Yeah, look, they've got many documents saying how terrible it is and how much deforestation it leads to, et cetera. But they don't make a differentiation between different types of farming, and they don't differentiate that these are the same guys who brought in the big monocropping, agricultural, heavy use of pesticides, insecticides, and damaging ways of agriculture that have affected the environment badly. They do not differentiate between other types of farming, which actually, you know, productively work with the land in a productive and good way.
It sounds sort of, going back to what you told us about at the start and why you sort of changed focus, it has a similar ring. There are alternatives, but you're not allowed to have them. You can only have this one thing.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same pattern again. And that was totalitarian in nature. This sounds like exactly that.
It's
potentially
it's very concerning, because what it will lead to, once you crisp animals, so they're crispering animals, so they, I don't know, I can't remember the details now, but there's all these different ways of crispered animals. They've crispered salmon to make it do something. They've got cows that they've crispered, pigs. They want to CRISPR it, so they'll genetically, I don't know, maybe they even have more meat on it, you know, meat on the animal, things like that. So, but when you're starting to CRISPR and you're genetically modifying seeds, animals, plants, you are then patenting it, and you're taking it out of the actual, you're taking food production out of people's hands.
Yeah.
And any autonomy with food production, it's incredibly dangerous. So the CSIRO's got many documents regarding food. They've got the National Synthetic Biology Roadmap. And It'd be good to talk a little bit about the tracking and tracing of the food systems as well and biosecurity, because they talk about engineered biosensors for biosecurity and surveillance and alternatives to animal proteins, engineered crops for improved nutritional content. They have the edible insects roadmap.
Eating the bugs, ultimately.
Eating the bugs for protein. They've got reshaping Australian food systems, and they say in there consumers are demanding more functional and traceable foods. You know, I just love the way that they put through litter through their documents that we're asking for it. You know, we, the ordinary people, want this. And they also say competition over land use planning, future decisions in agriculture, forestry, energy and conservation could increase competition for land and affect food production capacity. So they're using the example of biofuel, because you need that sort of energy. It's going to compete with traditional agriculture.
So basically, if there's a land problem, it's because there's a competitor for against traditional land use, so this master plan can be put into action.
Yes, absolutely. And then because they also want the tracking and tracing of carbon, so there's the whole putting the carbon into the soil, and we need to track and trace how much carbon's into the soil. So this is all through, and I haven't quite worked out how this is all working, but if you look at the regenerative food market and the food, which used to just be about really good practices on the land, it's more and more about, you know, putting carbon into the soil. And there's, so you've got to track and trace the amount of carbon. But when you look at the regen movement, there's authentic regen farmers that you would think of as regen, but they're now much more players in there that are talking about lab meat and synthetic food. And there's also crops they're talking about in the root system of crops, genetically altering those so you can draw down more carbon into the soil. So even though the regen movement looks like it's actually gaining steam and getting traction, there's a lot of mixed messaging within that arena that needs quite a bit of eyes on it as to what's really going on in there.
Is a persuasion effort going on at the moment, is it?
Well, I don't know if just, you know, like I think through life, and I think through, you can see that there's really good models of, you know, of how we can be together as, you know, how we can, I don't really know how to say it. There are good agricultural models, but you'll see over and over again that really good practices become co-opted with other, like the same language, but meaning something different. Even if you look at how health, the word health has been co-opted.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really mean health anymore, does it?
It's exactly the same thing. I mean, Rockefeller put out a report in 2020. COVID showed us up the crack lines and the supply issues and the fault lines and everything else, and now we need to bring in food as medicine. So food as medicine is always meant about eating really good food, you know, and using it as a medicine.
And we can do that now.
Yeah, but they don't mean that. They mean genetically altering the food systems, the food, so you can put in synthetic vitamins and minerals that relate to your health needs. So this is the thing, when people read and they, I don't understand how anyone who's in permaculture or regenerative farming could use the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals when the United Nations is explicitly saying that the future of food is this synthetic food systems.
They're working against their own interests.
Yes. How do you reconcile that?
Yeah. All right. I want to go through a couple of notes here I've got, I guess under the heading of biosecurity. Where does that leave bees?
Well, in Australia, in 2022 to 2023, Varroa mite was found in Newcastle in New South Wales. And from there onwards, an insane amount of killing of healthy bees occurred. So they depend, regardless of whether or not bees had Varroa mite, wherever one case of Varroa was found, a 10-kilometre red zone was established around that.
How many bees is that?
Well, they've said 40 million bees were killed, but I think it'd be a lot more.
Yeah.
That's the department's estimate of how many bees were killed. So they went through for over a year killing bees mercilessly, putting petrol in people's beehives and taping them up, and people were incredibly distressed. And this, and they also put fipronil down into the environment in case, and the idea was that rogue bees would come into the state and the national parks and everything else, state forests, and then they would eat these fipronil-laced sugar, I don't know, traps, yeah. And they would die. But obviously bees do not just die like that. They will take it to a nest and then the poison's in the nest and then poisons the ecosystem. So the fipronil was used off-label, even though there was a government-commissioned report saying it wasn't going to work in terms of killing rogue bees and it would have problems with other species. Of course it would. So they still went along and did that. And so a lot of issues in that you can't even find out how many of these traps were put out. Did they do any environmental cleanup? Are they doing any monitoring? The government won't answer my questions regarding that. So it's all just gone under the radar. At the end of 2023, there was a report in the ABC saying from the Department of Primary Industry saying, oh, we couldn't contain varroa because we've realised that it was in Australia for 1 to 1.5 years prior to it being picked up mid-2022. That's the only comment I've been able to find about that. And when did they find that out? When did they know that? Word on the ground is they knew that really early in. So why did they embark as though we can, oh, it's just one case over here and we can kill it over here and do it in a 10-kilometre zone and then it's over. So it just kept going through. And until people register this model that happens, which is we have to sacrifice a few for the common good, we're just going to get caught in biosecurity threat that culls huge amounts of, you know, our insects and our pollinators. And now it's gone on to chickens, where 1 million chickens are going to be killed in Victoria because, you know, of the biosecurity because of the chicken flu. And in northern New South Wales, southern Queensland, they're putting huge amounts of poisoning down because of the red fire ant, and that's going, they're spraying it over national parks.
Well, what's up with the red fire ant? Why are they being singled out?
Well, they've had it in Australia for 40 years, but they want to get on top of this red fire ant. So somehow they're going to kill every single red fire ant. And
really?
Yeah, and it's putting poison everywhere. And supposedly this poison doesn't kill anything else except for the red fire ant. It's an amazing poison. But that, again, is fipronil, and fipronil is banned in a number of countries around the world. And it's another poison called, pyriproxifen, which is known to stunt the development of tadpoles by impeding proper brain and genitalia growth. And it's raised concerns about it being used. So they're spraying these poisons down 6 times over 2 years, and it's in childcare centres, it's people's backyards, it's everywhere. It's through state forests, national parks, it's bizarre. So, you know, as much as they talk about, you know, we really need to care about the earth and the animals and the whatever else, they're poisoning, doing full-scale poisoning.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a willingness to poison things. We've got our conservation department that drops poison into the bush to kill the possums.
Yeah.
And they claim that it only deals to the possums, but we've got massive anecdotal evidence that it kills everything, actually. And they're supposed to be looking after the environment. This kind of need to kill everything. Can you explain that?
Look, I think what we're heading into, so I just want to bring up, so we're under a One Health model. And this is an integrated, so this is through the WHO, the World Health Organization, the United Nations. They're bringing everything together in a One Health model. So that's an integrated One Health system for human, animal, plant, and environmental health. And they're going to have early warning systems and management of national and global health risks. And in 2022, a memorandum of understanding was signed for a new era of One Health collaboration. That's the Food and Agricultural Organization. And remember, they are partnering with CropLife. We've got the World Health Organization. We've got the World Organization for Animal Health and the United Nations Environment Program. And they're tasked with sustainably balancing, this is their words, sustainably balancing and optimizing the health of humans, animals, plants, and environment. So what I foresee is that we're going to have biosecurity threat after biosecurity threat, culling of the natural world and our animals and our plants. And then this world is just so dangerous, you know, so dangerous to animals and humans, and we live in such a toxic environment. This is their wording even, and this is how I think they think. So we have to get into smart cities that are resilient and can protect us from and remove humans from the natural world to be able to have this safe, sanitized version of life that is digitally modeled in a supercomputer. You know, we're all just nodes in a machine.
Yep.
And we need our food, you know, like made in laboratories and made sure that there's no contaminants in there, and then brought in, you know, through drones, and we can put it through our 3D printers. That's my understanding after reading documents for a couple of years as to their vision of what life is.
And this is a small minority of the human population wanting to impose this on the vast majority, basically.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yep, absolutely. Track control and have this version of what a life is.
Have you come across or debated with any of these people directly? And what is your assessment of the sort of people they are?
Look, I haven't yet come across, I wouldn't mind having some discussions actually in this field, but they, on the surface, so you've got a lot of CSIRO people that you know, the ex-CEO of the CSIRO is investing heavily in this synthetic biology food. You've got big players that would know where, you know, potential markets are going to be, that are investing heavily in it. Then you have a lot of young people. So the faces of the corporations are young people who are excited about, you know, absolutely transforming the world into this vision. And that's the curious thing to me, because it's people that are older, I think, going, this is horrendous, based on these technologies, but based on the track records of the funders who have done so much damage through the world. How can you trust this? And do you know what you're part of? So I don't think they all know what they're part of, and the machinery that they're part of. I think they're excited by thinking that they can transform the world and have an impact. It'll always be talked about having an impact for the global good.
Yeah, they don't know what they're getting into, I think so, and they'd be serious regret. Here's a big question. This is immoral, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's immoral. I think it's immoral for a number of reasons, but I also think what really gets me is that they are doing this. They're transforming the global food system. How many people are aware about it? How many people know that's happening?
Well, that's why I asked before.
I know. And if this is such a good thing for the planet, this is where it falls down. If they genuinely, I don't like saying they, because I think you've got to clarify who you're talking about.
I wish I knew who they were, the ultimate they.
Yeah, exactly.
Person is. Yeah.
Exactly. But if they felt really good about this and this is fantastic, why isn't, okay, let's just talk about the government. There's a master plan here. Why aren't they sitting down and our state MPs and our federal MPs aren't giving talks to the public saying, look, the world is in such dire straits, we have to transform the whole global system. This is what we're planning to do. Why don't they let us know? Why is it just...
Because they know it's not acceptable.
Yeah, it's just a little bit of legislation over here.
So why do something that's not acceptable?
Yeah, exactly. Why do something that's not acceptable?
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, I don't know either. Unless you're evil of intent, your intent is kind of evil. That's why I'm thinking about the morality question.
And then you've got just another layer of it, just with even just politicians who wouldn't be necessarily thinking they're doing anything wrong, but what they're not doing is doing the right thing by the people that they're tasked to represent, and actually doing some research and being open-minded enough to have a look at what's really going on in the world instead of their little PR spin.
Yeah, it's a very spinny, not much, no knowledge.
No, they read a little two-page, you know, member, you know, this is what you need to go out and regurgitate rather than actually attending to what's happening in the world.
I've never eaten synthetic meat. Have you?
Well, it's not in the market yet.
Okay, Yeah, I know it's not on the market, but I've seen, you know, some reports of people who've sampled it and tasted it and given their view, and usually it's not very good. So I wonder if it'll ever be accepted. Mind you, if you're forced to eat it, what do you do?
Well, if you have so many biosecurity threats that you know, push out a whole bunch of natural food production, you know, what are people going to do? So I don't know. Like, there's different, Guy Hatchett, I think I just read a little bit about what he was saying. He doesn't think it's possible. I'd be interested in finding out if it actually isn't possible, why are they doing this still?
Wants an international genetic charter, of course.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I had a quick chat to him today, and I said, when did this all start happening? It used to be so regulated, because the precision fermentation and the lab meat, it's not considered GMO. It's not even labeled GMO.
But it is, isn't it?
It's completely genetically modified. There's nothing natural. It's completely, it's genes are cut.
Well, if you said it was GMO, people would run away from it.
Yeah, well, they used to, didn't they? Like, it was really stringent around GMO. And so I just said to him, how did this happen? It's like, you know, the horse has bolted. It seemed like a regulated industry, and now there's no regulation anymore. And he said the changes started to happen in the 1990s. So I'm keen to find out more of the history of how this has happened.
So you just carry on doing what you're doing and hope people start listening and people start watching the videos. And do you think there's any hope at all at lobbying anyone to put the brakes on this, to throw the emergency stop on, you know?
Yeah, when we did we put a submission in when the Vow Meat, the lab quail, when they opened up for the FSANZ, and you can do your community submission. So we put a submission, and we said we want a forensic audit to happen through all the stages of the process. So people's names need to be on there about, because there's many stages, you know, even where you get the gene line from, where you get the cell from, you know, all the different components that go in, people's names and corporations need to be attached to that. There needs to be something that's transparent regarding the process and who's responsible. Because when we looked at the Vow Food and their documentation they put into the food standards body, their literature search, we have to do a literature search to say, you know, how healthy is this? What sort of, you know, how good is this food? Their literature search was to real quail. So they compared their lab quail to real quail, because there's no other food in the market they can compare it to. So this is what it's just bait and switch. Like, it's got nothing to do with real quail. They put synthetic vitamins and minerals in that are meant to look similar to the amount that's in a real quail. And this is how it works. Surely people must be responsible for this. If you're going to have these big biotech, you know, industries, you have to be responsible if it makes people sick. So that might be one way of going, we want this all audited so we know who's responsible.
Because none of this is tested or anything, is it?
I don't think so. I haven't come across that it's been tested.
Have to know that if people ate this for a lifetime, they'd be all right. There's no way of ever knowing that.
No, there's not. It's coming through very quickly. These transformations are coming through very, very quickly. Even in the UN document, Transforming Food Systems, the role of novel protein alternatives, they say there are gaps in understanding the nutritional benefits. So they talk about how wonderful it is, but there are gaps in understanding the benefits.
You mean gaps you can drive super tankers through, probably?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So
is this fundamentally, to wrap up, because up against time, this is a war against nature, really, isn't it?
It's a war against nature. It's just horrendous. And if you really go and look at terraforming, and, you know, there's a professor in Moscow talking about that the whole world has to be terraformed, has to be synthetically altered to be able to have human life on it.
That can't fly. There's a huge amount of land. We could probably take another 4 or 5 billion, okay, if we organised our food. Because that's the other thing. We're not organising the supply of food properly for the population, are we?
No. And I think with the meddling in different countries around the world that these big, massive corporate entities have done, they've actually created, you know, food systems to flatline rather than leave it in the hands of small-scale farmers.
I mean, if people were really genuine, we could say, okay, 5% of our agricultural production we'll give to the third world. If every country did that, probably wouldn't be a problem ever.
Mm.
Am I just dreaming?
Just dreaming. There's massive markets to be made with this. But, yeah, I can see where they're heading, and I do think it's time for Australians, and I would say New Zealanders, to start to pay some attention to this, because I don't want to our children having to eat this sort of food because everything else has been wiped out.
Yeah, and I don't want them supporting it either.
No, no. And so even the vegans, I would say this to even vegans, and I, you know, I do have an appreciation for the, you know, that factory farming of animals can be quite horrendous. But you need to, I would just say you're actually supporting an industry that's going to patent all food supplies, and you do need to reckon with that if you support it. Not all vegans support this either, this biotech. So if you do think this is a great idea, you need to be reckoning with a few the aspects that, you know, we've talked about today.
Kay Mason, it's been really interesting chatting with you. If people want to find out more, I mean, I mentioned how they could search out your video, the video presentation that you did, but Facebook, website, if you've got somewhere where people can go, maybe it'd be a good idea to let us know about it.
Yeah, so I've got Facebook, Kate Mason Blogger, Facebook, and I'm on Telegram just under Kate Mason, and I have YouTube under Kate Mason, and I have Substack, which I write more extensively under, so you can just search Kate Mason Substack, and I will get a website up. I've done a lot of videos. I'm looking at quite a few different areas of what's going on. I'd love to just be able to stick to one, but there's just too many things going on with too few eyes on it. So at the moment I'm finding I'm having to keep looking into a number of areas.
Well, I see nearly 4,000 views of your YouTube video on your page, and it's been up for 6 days. So that's not too bad.
Yeah, I think that was helped along by Guy.
Oh, well, whatever, eh? Whatever helps.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for giving us a bit of time. Really interesting to hear what you had to say and a lot to think about. Oh, my God.
Yeah, thank you.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.